now Witness History with me, Rebecca Kesby. And today we explore the story of one of China's most powerful and controversial women, the Empress Dowager Cixi. She was the power behind the Chinese throne for nearly 50 years until she died in 1908. She presided over monumental change, but was vilified as a tyrant for decades. It wasn't until the 1970s that her story was properly documented. I've been speaking to the Chinese-American academic who first revisited her legacy.
She was described as an evil ruler, domineering. She supposedly murdered her son, murdered her nephew. She was bloodthirsty, and she brought down the Manchu rule of China.
So it's fair to say, then, that history had not been kind to the Empress Dowager Cixi. A contemporary of Queen Victoria, she was little known outside China and little respected under the communist regime that eventually followed her. Most of the accounts used as evidence for any academic comment about her had been based on palace gossip and rumour. That is until a young PhD student at the University of California, Su Fawn Chung, decided to forensically study the original documents, probably the first person ever to do so.
I thought, this very important leader of China has never really been studied in a scholarly manner and really needs to be done. So that's how I embarked on this subject.
It was the mid-70s, and women's movements were challenging male dominance all over the world. Even in China, the question of female leadership was at the center of politics.
Mao's wife Zhang Qing wanted to emphasize the possibility of the role of a female leader of China, because that's what she aspired to. So she decided to revise or relook at the Empress Dowager Cixi.
But Madame Mao, or Zhang Qing's own unpopularity after Mao's death in 1976, didn't exactly help her attempts to re-establish Cixi as a great leader. And anyway, in spite of a global feminist wave, it was still tough for women to get anywhere.
My undergraduate advisor, when I was doing my senior honors thesis, said, "Don't hope to get a job as a professor in a university, because the history departments are very conservative and would never hire a woman."
Nevertheless, Su Fawn Chung persisted, even learning the Manchu language as well as Chinese to interpret official documents.
I wanted to see what the court records said about her. There were diaries and recordings and collected papers of officials who supported her. But one of the interesting things that emerged was the writings of two English historians whom I subsequently learned hated Queen Victoria, who ruled at the same time as the Empress Dowager. Their animosity towards their own female ruler came out in their writing.
So the story was being told then from a very misogynistic viewpoint.
All history in those days were written by men. And if you were a male who was offended by a female ruler, you only wrote bad things about her. The court records are also written in Manchu.
So you had to learn that from scratch.
Yes. You also have to know Japanese, because they have a very different perspective, of course, but also very anti-female.
What about the Chinese historians?
The Chinese historians were so busy. There was civil war, chaos, warlords. The Japanese came in 1931, and then in 1949, the communists come in. No one really wanted to go back and re-examine the Empress Dowager's rule.
So how did Cixi make this extraordinary and unlikely rise to power in the first place? Well, originally she was selected as a low-ranking concubine or official mistress of the emperor. She was born into a Manchu family, a minority ethnic group, but one that had dominated China's ruling elite for generations, and with a different culture to the majority Han Chinese.
The Manchus allowed women to have strong positions in their tribes. The Chinese always felt a woman should be obedient to her father in youth, obedient to her husband in marriage, and obedient to her son when she becomes a widow. So Cixi went into this world.
But as the only concubine to produce a male child, she was elevated to the title Empress. Her natural intelligence and political acumen meant she soon became a favourite and close advisor to the emperor.
This particular emperor that she married was a sort of weakling, And he liked Cixi, and he found her to be intelligent. So he allowed her to sit into debates at court as to how to control China in this period of great change, and particularly what to do about Westerners who were coming into the country trying to sell opium to the people. And he was afraid of them. And she took a more determined stance and said, we have to do something about the situation that we're facing. And so what we see is a great court debate going on. And then all of a sudden, he dies, and his son, who is still a minor, is to be the new emperor.
But Cixi's son was only 5 when he became the new emperor, leaving his mother, now the Empress Dowager, as the real decision maker. When he died, suddenly, she put her infant nephew on the throne and continued her own rule. But amid the chaos in China, she became seen as a steady hand.
So she builds a clique of officials, both Manchu and Chinese, and they felt that she provided a stable society, which allows the modernization of Chinese government.
It seems as if she tried to persuade people, to convince people, was always trying to build consensus rather than being too combative. Is that also partly because her own position initially was quite precarious?
Yes, I think so. And she found people who were willing to work with her. They admired her and they were willing to support her.
By now, Cixi was incredibly powerful and respected for her strong, if ruthless, leadership. But she still had to operate within ancient gender-specific traditions, such as never speaking face-to-face with a man and sitting behind the throne, obscured by a curtain.
They had a screen put up, and all of the officials would bow down to the throne, which was an empty chair, or her nephew. He would sit there, and she would be behind the screen, listen to what was going on, and she would make the decision. And they all knew that she was making the decision.
The absence of a strong alternative leader and the untimely deaths of the child emperors she appointed left Cixi in charge for decades. The population grew, as did the economy. There were efforts to improve education for girls and to outlaw foot binding. Possibly not her idea, but she didn't oppose the reforms. And there were advancements in industry and steps towards parliamentary government. But as she aged, the question of what would come next loomed.
Things were going well for a lot of people, but there were people who said the Manchus shouldn't be ruling, the Chinese should be ruling, and that was one of the big issues. When you're a leader, you have to think about who's going to come next, and she did not train anybody to take over her position or that kind of a position in ruling. Having ruled for so long, she wasn't really willing to give up power and the influence that she had.
The Empress Dowager Cixi died in 1908, leaving a 2-year-old boy on the throne. In less than 3 years, the Manchu Qing dynasty fell under pressure from reformers. So you wrote your paper, The Much Maligned Empress Dowager, in the late 70s, and it had an immediate effect on how this period of Chinese history was viewed. Did you find yourself actually liking her, though, as a character?
I tried to understand her and her motives, but I don't think I particularly liked her because she was such a domineering, you might say even pig-headed woman.
But did you end up admiring her, perhaps in a way that you hadn't before?
Yes, absolutely, because I don't think she was as evil as historians have portrayed her. And hopefully what we'll see in the future is more people using Chinese sources to understand the complicated world that she faced.
Professor Su Fong-Chung. She was speaking to me, Rebecca Kesby, for this edition of Witness History.